I'm going to whisper some things to you now about Crunch chocolate bars. Because apparently this whispering thing is a thing that makes you feel things. It's saying something crunchy is coming in the candy wrapper language. Imagine your tongue hiking up those crispy, rocky ridges. Now, drum roll, please.
Wow, that's good. Crunchy, munchy chocolate doesn't whisper.
Turn up the fun with Crunch.
Hello and welcome to the Transfer Window, the podcast that brings you the news before it becomes news, as well as insight and analysis into all the subjects that you're talking about in football. I'm Ian McGarry, and I'm delighted to say joining me today is, as usual, our transfer guru, Dr. Duncan Castles, but also the doyen of La Liga TV, Mr. Graham Hunter, who's going to talk us through the subjects surrounding El Clasico, which takes place this weekend, as well as a news story that Duncan has right now on the potential move of Neymar. Duncan, what is the latest on the Brazil international's future?
Well, look, it's something that's, I think, come as a shock to Paris Saint-Germain, and something that you would say was unexpected, because it's the signals from Neymar's camp for the best part of a year has been that he was happy at Paris Saint-Germain and he was going to sign a new contract there, and he'd been trying to get Lionel Messi to come and join him, and all was finally sweetness and light in Paris after that record move, and after basically summer after summer of him trying to get out of Paris Saint-Germain and get back to Barcelona. Now, the information I have is that Neymar has called a halt to those negotiations with Paris Saint-Germain, is refusing to sign the new contract that's been offered to him, and is once again pushing for a move to Barcelona. The proposal, I think, here is dependent on Messi staying at Barcelona and using the leverage of that friendship to try and convince Barcelona that the right idea is to bring Neymar back as their kind of stellar signing, as the headline signing of Laporta's new regime, rather than a player like Erling Haaland, who they had those sort of well-televised meetings, discussions with last week. When I heard this, I assumed that Neymar was suggesting he run down his contract because he only has a year left at Paris Saint-Germain and moves on a free transfer in a year's time. Apparently that's not the case. He's not known for his patience, so he thinks it can be done, and he thinks it can be done with a player going the other way. So Paris Saint-Germain would take a Barcelona high-earning Barcelona player off their books. That exchange would allow them a bit of FFP trickery in terms of putting a value on Neymar's transfer and a value on the outgoing player's transfer that made the books of both clubs look better, make a bit of space on the wage room for Neymar, and get him back where he only wanted to leave when there was a big offer on the table from PSG, and that idea that he goes to France and becomes the best player in the world. The player I'm hearing as the most likely outgoing for Barcelona to Paris Saint-Germain is Antoine Griezmann. Under contract, I think, at Barcelona till 2024. Graham on the last podcast told us how he finally this season started to deliver at the kind of levels that Barcelona expected and had developed a good relationship with Messi on the pitch. But I think overall, not the most successful transfer. So you could see the logic in France international moving to Paris Saint-Germain. But look, this surprised me in the sense that all the noise was he was going to stay. But then again, if you look at his career, if you look at the way he and his father have managed movements between clubs, in this expectation he seems to have that he can have the best of all worlds in all circumstances, perhaps it's not such a surprise that Laporta comes in as president, Messi looks more likely to stay than he has done for such for a long, long period now. And Neymar thinks, okay, well, maybe there's an opportunity for me to get back to Barcelona, get a good contract there, and shift the, you know, the football tectonics in my favour again.
Graham, would this surprise you in terms of Neymar's return to Barcelona?
No.
If that indeed is what's going to happen?
No, it's a good storyline, well explained. The echoes that are going on over here, in a news sense, are that Dembele is out of contract in 2022. The club want to renew him. He's keen on staying, but how to find the right remuneration for a guy who's had certainly his best season since he was at Borussia Dortmund. It's got to be verging on his best season ever. Pound for pound, he looked a fine player. He was constantly fit at Rennes. But given the pressure, given the company that he's playing in, given the impact that he's had in all competitions, pound for pound, this is at or around his best season. So how they renew him is a matter of debate. They definitely want to keep him, but in terms of the swapping pawn for pawn idea that Duncan was proposing there, his name will come up. Secondly, nothing has declined at all for Griezmann in terms of his relationship with the players around him, and particularly with Messi, which was the thorniest issue in the distant past. What hasn't developed particularly well is Ronald Koeman's, how would I say it? Not maybe appreciation is the right word. So Griezmann will now once again slightly more regularly miss out if it's 3-5-2 and De Jong plays in the midfield rather than at the back. And therefore what's often happening is Barcelona have been playing what people have been calling a 3-5-2, but it starts a 3-4-3, and that accommodates Griezmann. When they go 3-5-2, which I think they will for this weekend's Clásico, there's a distinct chance that as long as they remain fit, it's Messi and Dembele up front and Griezmann on the bench. Griezmann is a highly smart, very proactive guy. I know, and this is a direct quote from him to his private entourage, not something he said in public, his view, and it's just as well because he just had his third child this week, is that he's got money for life, for his kids' life and for his grandchildren's lives. Therefore, the things that he does, both in his off-the-pitch ventures and how he spends his football career, according to his logic, needs to be now about enjoyment and achievement, satisfaction. So I know, as a matter of fact, that he's got his eyes peeled as to what the best option now is for him, whether it's to remain and try to convince Koeman, who wasn't certain of being renewed and now is, or, pardon, not renewed, retained. He has 1 year left in his contract. There's also an absolute obsession by Joan Laporta to bring Erling Haaland. That doesn't need to be gone into in massive depth today, because whether Barcelona are viewed as favourites or non-runners, the fact is that it's immensely, immensely difficult for them to do the finances. But Joan Laporta is massively determined, obsessed almost, and resourceful. So the minimum you could say if you're Griezmann or Dembele would be, look, you just never know with this guy. And if Haaland is brought in, then the room for playing a start in place diminishes again. So there have been echoes in this part of the world about Neymar wanting to come back again, having decided that there's a gap for him. And his camp are not particularly strategically smart, I would say. I mean, they at Santos, they followed the lure of relationship and money by dumping a deal to Real Madrid, which was, as far as Florentino Perez was concerned, was done and agreed. Went to Barcelona instead. decided to get out of the shadow of Leo Messi so that Neymar could be Ballon d'Or material, and therefore went to Paris Saint-Germain. How did that work out? Not great so far. You never know whether he ends the season with a Champions League medal, but nonetheless, it hasn't gone particularly well, I would say. And therefore, you used the word surprise a couple of times, Duncan, and I think that one of the surprising things would be that if Neymar's people have been so tactical, because this is a really good tactical move, Paris Saint-Germain are in the process of trying to underline their credibility in European terms by building around Neymar and Mbappe, both of whom now seem to want away. It's a very difficult situation for them. They need to maintain their credibility. That has to be done. They want to be a world power. You don't just get that by using money. You have to sign stars and retain stars and show other stars that your star properties are happy and successful. And I think it's pretty, I take it as crystal clear that Mbappe wants to go to Real Madrid this summer. On balance, I think it might happen too. So Neymar leaving, I take Duncan's points about the way in which you can stack that up in favour of Paris Saint-Germain. There are ways to make it positive in terms of a player swap, in terms of FFP. That's all fine. But there are other star properties. I imagine if a player swap is what happens, then Paris Saint-Germain need to be ultra careful about how they're perceived. Are they perceived by the most powerful agents as being easy taps to get the players out of? Will other players want to leave as well? It's a horrendous situation for Paris Saint-Germain's owners and Leonardo, in my view. But I think that what I understand is happening over here corresponds, dovetails perfectly with Duncan's terrific news line. And the one thing I'll say is, I know where Antoine Griezmann has already got suitors who've been in touch with him over the last couple of weeks. I do not know whether Paris Saint-Germain have contacted him or his people have contacted Paris Saint-Germain. Now that's something that it isn't in my knowledge. So him leaving, it's definitely feasible and part of a swap. They're similar ages, he and Neymar. You could imagine the poetic nature of Griezmann, who was rejected by Paris Saint-Germain when he was a kid doing the rounds from his home in Lyon. There are a number of clubs who turned him down because he was too slight, too frail. His status with the national team, his status in France, all of those things, I'd imagine could make him a big ticket item if the swap had to take place. He's a prodigiously good professional, and he can be an on-pitch leader and a brand leader too. So there's no question, there's no doubt in my mind about the quality of the news line that Duncan's proposing, nor are there many doubts that there's a feasibility to what might unravel over the next 8-9 weeks.
Now, Barcelona did this last summer with Juventus, put artificially high prices on Pjanic and Arthur to make their books look better, something you flagged up to us ahead of time on the podcast. What, Graham, is your feeling on Laporta's view of this importance he's placed on bringing a big name signing in, and whether Neymar would be satisfactory for him in his return as president?
I think that I can't overemphasize his obsession with Haaland. And what's more, he's right. However you view Raiola, however you view the understanding, which has definitely been leaked from Club Barcelona, that Haaland Senior and Raiola both expect a commission of around 20 million euros to make the deal happen. However you view any of these things, if you stand back and look at Erling Haaland, never mind our dropped jaws with amazement about what he can achieve at that age, his scoring rate in elite company, but also the trajectory of improvements, because you can see them beyond the goals. You can see his determination to become a better footballer. You can see his tactical nous changing. And everybody who's ever coached him, worked with him, talks about the fact that he is lacking I am the big I am already, and his determination to work on facets of his game, which aren't yet, which are at the level that a 20-year-old Norwegian should be. And therefore, what happens is, if you look at him objectively, you start to say, although he bears no relation to Messi and how he plays at all, they're like different planets, obviously. And although Cristiano Ronaldo wouldn't thank you for the comparison, there's potentially the case that while Mbappe was certainly by me viewed as the Dauphin for the throne that Ronaldo and Messi have been fighting over for so many years, Haaland might be slightly aesthetically less pleasing and so on and so forth, but there's the one that you absolutely bet on, I think. If you want to say, what's the opportunity cost? If we don't sign, if we can't do all this cost, and he ends up at one in our division, one of our rivals, you don't really want him with a big European rival dominating the continental competition. But if he ends up in our league and he's with somebody else, what does that cost us over 6, 7, 8 years? I think that's driving a lot of what Laporta is up to right now. So I use that in answer to your point about Neymar, because right now there is no question that it will take somebody prizing Laporta's jaws off the concept of signing Haaland for anything else to be sufficiently attractive. Laporta, from a distance, when the Bartomeu board played the cards so ineptly and Neymar left for Paris Saint-Germain, Laporta was noticeably cold about Neymar's actions, decision-making, where he'd gone. And I'm not for a second saying that he would reject Neymar, and nor, as you wisely point out, would he reject any manner of making the books look better, because he is frantically, you know, spinning plates on the top of garden canes about how to attract new credit, how to reschedule existing current short-term debt, which is about 700 million. He's desperately looking for new ways of earning money rather than the credit lines I talked about, borrowing money, and bookkeeping exercises where he buys himself and his financial VP time and space, it will become inevitable, will be irresistible to them. And therefore, that's why, you know, I buy not only the news line, but the strategy, the logic behind it. It can work, because I don't want to be underpricing Laporta in terms of how much of an opponent he is to everybody else who wants to sign Haaland. They may stand, you know, in sinking sands with Club Barcelona as far as the race to sign Haaland is concerned, but they do have very attractive cards, and Laporta is obsessed by getting him. If those things fall down, if he can be dissuaded, if he comes to the realization it's impossible, and you're the intermediary, Duncan, offering him the news line you've just read out as a deal, then he bites your hand off.
Well, apart from signing marquee players, something that would make the socios of Barcelona very happy would be winning La Liga title this season, and Laporta obviously would be happy to take credit for that. On Saturday evening, Real Madrid entertained Football Club de Barcelona in the final Clásico of the season in La Liga. Atletico Madrid maintain a slender lead at the top of the table. However, Barcelona just 2 points ahead of Madrid. Graham, you're going to be in the chair, I'm sure, for La Liga TV on Saturday evening. This seems to me to be one of the most sort of crucial Clásico ties of recent years, given that the positions of both clubs and the fact they're both chasing Atleti.
Yeah, by your argument, and the stakes went up because no matter what Atleti do in Seville against Betis this weekend, having lost in Seville against the red and white half last weekend, Luis Suarez's muscle injury, he and Condobia and Marcos Llorente were all suspended for the trip to Betis, allowing the idea that Manuel Pellegrini's side might conjure up a win and throw the whole title race completely into disarray. That aside, Suarez's muscle injury that he picked up in training 2 days ago suggests that he'll be out for 3 weeks. And they've heavily relied on him, genuinely very heavily. They've underused him in terms of Cholo Simeone's ability to get the team high up the pitch and supporting their talismanic striker, as Suarez has become already. So both Barca and Madrid, in terms of the build-up to this game on Saturday night, will be looking not simply at what's immediately in front of them now, but they'll be calculating that Atleti might lose more points over the coming 3 weeks. Might. And therefore, yeah, it's not quite winner-takes-all, but it's pretty damn close to it. And it'll be the first time Barcelona have played Madrid without crowd. Certainly in modern, I don't know, it might have been the case that back in the 10s or 20s of the 20th century, there may have been a closed-door game. I'm not aware of one. It'll be played at the Alfredo Di Stefano training ground. We can't ignore, as much as I certainly think that Messi will renew his contract and stay. Each of us, for example, just to be parochial, was working in this industry when Maurice Johnson was paraded on the pitch with a Celtic strip at Parkhead and played the next few seasons for Rangers. Close that deal is the haunting refrain for every sales executive. No deal's done until the ink is dry, and therefore you can use the phrase, this might be Leo Messi's last Clásico. It might be. He's gone a handful of years since scoring in a winning Clásico. I think about 6 or 7 of the 14 Clásicos that he's lost have come in the last 17 matches when he's only scored 5 times. You know, by comparison, Karim Benzema scored 5 times in the last 19 Clásicos, putting him, you know, eachy-peachy very close to Messi's numbers. There's been a change in Messi's relationship with the Clásico. He's the dominant figure in it. He's still got a winning ratio in it. He's the leading scorer in the Clásico. And you'd still say over the length of his time at Football Club Barcelona, 16 years since he debuted in a 3-0 win at Madrid when Ronaldinho scored twice and left Ramos in his wake, you could say Leo Messi has tormented Madrid. But you would equally have to say that of late, Madrid's players, Madrid's coaches, some of Madrid's systems have found it easier to cope with Leo Messi. Again, it's about 2018 since he gave a goal assist. Barcelona have won against Madrid in the subsequent years without Messi scoring or assisting. But it's an anomaly. It's strange. And therefore, we go into this having to note that if something went wrong, if Messi was ultra-seduced by a relaunching of Paris Saint-Germain and Manchester City's interest, if Laporta couldn't find the money to do big signings and renew Messi, if Laporta found money but Messi isn't, well, that's not enough. Whatever, there are many a slip between cup and lip. But I think Messi will stay. He's vastly happier. And that was, money aside, that was a crucial element. He's got a decent, really surprisingly strong relationship with Koeman, the coach. He adores Pedri. He's enjoying playing with Dembele and De Jong. It's a different Messi, completely different from last August. Therefore, on balance, I think he stays. It isn't done, and he goes into this game with it hanging over him too mentally, Ian, that this might be his last Clásico. And therefore, the summary I think is, I'm going to be surprised if we don't see win, lose or draw a Leo Messi imprint in this match.
Graham, on your last appearance on the podcast, as you warmed up for the US Masters, you explained to us how Barcelona turned themselves into a winning team again. Can you do a similar one for Zinedine Zidane and Real Madrid and how they've turned their season around for us?
Yeah. There are three simple elements, and it's not been a rejigging as has been the case with Football Club Barcelona. Benzema is having one of the seasons of his life because, albeit now he scored over 80 goals in 150 games since Cristiano left. And that in itself is an assuming responsibility. That in itself is a slight alteration by him from being the number 10, the domestique to the team leader, and becoming a nine again, even though, you know, in terms of position, he plays wherever he thinks is best, and he'll assist as happily as he will score. His form this season has been just a joy to watch. You know, at 33... to be this live, to be this athletic, to be tireless, to never look as if he's a bit physically jaded. It patently helps him, as controversial as it is. His semi-formal exclusion from the France team, it helps him that he can rest during international breaks. But he's been just... It isn't just give me the ball. It's give me the responsibility. It's been absolutely wonderful to watch. When you commentate on him, when you tune in to watch him, I guess when you play with him, it's just guaranteed entertainment, because win, lose, or draw, the football intelligence, the creativity that you see from him, topped off by something that you normally only see in outright, absolute, selfish penalty box strikers, which Benzema isn't. And that is that if he has a clear chance or two or three in a game and they're saved, or he fluffs them, it makes absolutely no imprint on him whatsoever. He's never put off. He never lowers his self-belief or the next one's going in, not by an iota. And that itself is just a treat to watch. Second element is the midfield. Real Madrid are athletically less energetic. They're less. They look a little bit careworn this season compared to last. The fitness coach, Gregory Dupont, had an exceptional season last season. He'd only just joined. He changed their physical athletic profile would be a better way to say it, sorry. They pressed differently. They won the ball high up the pitch. They were relentless. Their transition play wasn't Premier League level, but perhaps it's more precise, and that they still are one of the best transition teams going in Europe. And this season, they're winning the ball less high up the pitch. They're pressing much differently. They're being patently sensible about the fact that, you know, the preseason is so short. They've got a relatively aging team. They, like everybody else, are suffering the lack of rest, the compacted season, the group Champions League week after week has never been played like that before, and the impacts have been big on a midfield that's got, you know, look at Modric at 35, Kroos seeking his 31st birthday. Okay, Casemiro's only 29, but overall, if you throw in Ramos and Carvajal and Nacho and Benzema, there's a lot of 30-somethings in there. And therefore, what they've done is slightly readjust their pitch positions for the Modric, Casemiro, Kroos midfield. They've had to do without Valverde, which is a real blow. And those three have been, again, just world-class. That's part of what's happened, Duncan. When Modric or Kroos or Casemiro were floundering a little bit in autumn, every now and again, and just looked a little bit tired and looked a little bit reaching for second or third gear and not finding it, there was never a lack of will. But there was a, hey, what's going on with us? And they sorted it out. They found their form. And there's been brinksmanship. Harry Houdini would be smiling down from heaven at Real Madrid, because both domestically and in Europe, they brought themselves to the precipice. And largely those three have said, no, we're not going over it. And the third element, I said it was three. Courtois having a very, very good season indeed. Really focused, really reliable. And as Sergio Ramos, as influence as leader of the gang, which he is, hasn't diminished, but his presence has diminished. He's been absent from the training ground and the team a lot this season. Courtois, who initially came in and was happy to do his thing and not be a team leader, group leader, and who found suspicion from Sergio Ramos because Ramos was such a Kehler fan, they've sorted that out. They did after about a season, and Courtois has become somebody much more vocal, much more of a leader, and therefore he has naturally assumed more responsibility for attitudes, results, assessment of performances afterwards. That's been a positive for him because he has no competition behind him. Lunin is no competition. He's normally a player who, if he hasn't got competition, can smoke a cigar and be a little bit satisfied with himself. This season, he hasn't done that, even though there's no chance of his not even being rotated in the cup, hardly. And therefore, those are the three elements. There's been little that you could dust the story with other bits of hundreds and thousands. Keeper, midfield, Benzema. That's your answer.
As usual, Graham telling us things we didn't know, although I must admit I didn't see Harry Houdini as a Real Madrid supporter coming out of left field or even left of left field. Graham, before you go, because I know that you have a busy day ahead of you, you know Mikel Arteta pretty well. You've had dealings with him in the past. Can you give us some insight as to what is going on in terms of why it's not working for him at Arsenal with regards to results? And also, there seems to be a series of player disputes and fallings out, etc. And he's struggling a bit.
The thing that annoys me most is that many of those, whether it be fans or those who populate social media, some in the media, they don't do what Churchill warned against in 1948, those who don't learn history are doomed to repeat its failures. There's a lot of shit being spoken about. You know, you blink and Arteta's had a change of title and therefore it's his team. Is it You know, there are strains of immaturity, misbehaviour, cliques, things that will, I'm sad to say, take more time, more money, and potentially better transfer controllers to sort out that Arteta is having to deal with at the moment. He's somebody who, in my opinion, I have no trouble if people say I don't believe in him as a coach, or I don't like what I'm seeing in front of my eyes, and blah, blah, blah. That's fine. My opinion is contrary to that. He is still, as head coach, as manager, he's still, you can use the word inexperienced. He's got good experience from having been part of the team at Manchester City. He also, in my opinion, is contrary to this picture that's been built up of him, somebody who's much stronger. I think he is easily one of the most strategically and tactically astute coaches, irrespective of age, anywhere in Europe, in my opinion. I also think, and some players that work for him see it this way exactly, that he's extraordinary in how he can communicate this to players, both pre-matches and in play. Does that mean that his man management skills are perfect? I don't think so. I think that the whole concept of learning of how to handle individuals, how to handle stroppy individuals, how to handle immature individuals, how to handle those who are mega wealthy and don't really think they don't need you. Those are tasks that every manager, if you ask Ferguson about those issues, he would tell you that the dealing with people, apart from the ultimate of saying, right, you're out of the club, dealing with people who think that they're rich enough not to need you, dealing with ego, dealing with people who have entourages that are telling them, talking mince in their ear, that's something that Arteta has to find his rhythm at. And I think that will take more time. The exigencies of Arsenal wanting to be higher up the table than a stuttering Spurs, the exigencies of Arsenal needing to be guaranteed European competition, to go far in European competition, and to be in the Champions League as soon as possible as a matter of ultra urgency. All these things will cost him. And frankly, I'm not tied to Arteta, and I'm not an Arsenal fan. So if Arsenal screw it up and are infantile enough to get rid of Arteta, it'll be about 6 to 8 months after that, we're saying, well, what job Arteta's doing at whichever club he takes on next. He's exceptional. I think he's absolutely exceptional. He's on an apprentice route at the moment, because he has not had the time yet to fully develop, nor lads to assimilate, just like the players, you know, because we work at this this non-stop Olympic pace, and we learn, assimilate, assess, move on. It's different for players and managers, this concertina effect. Whereas Arteta had time to reflect or think or learn or develop, when you're in the gym, they say, do your work, you push the muscles, and the muscles need downtime, 2-3 days, to change their shape and to grow. Where, as any manager that's new at the moment, never mind Arteta, they are, all of them are clinging on by their fingertips, all of them, to this massive entertainment industry that we benefit from and that fans still love. You know, the Arteta experiment at the moment has come at a time when massive amounts of things are still against him. I'm not going to say it's a miracle that Arsenal are where they are. They're imperfect. They blow hot and cold. It's clear that some of the players still need to be moved out. I have no question that, one, there's a quality deficit. Two, some of the new signings haven't yet bedded in properly for whatever reason. And three, in terms of comparative quality, they're not there yet. They just aren't. And he's still at an apprentice stage. So I'm unsurprised about what they look like or where they are. But I have complete faith that they have the right man. And if they can't see it, then bollocks.
Graham, that's a great point about concertina season. I think Tottenham this week play a Premier League game for the first time this season where they've had an entire week to prepare for it, which is quite remarkable, but not that uncommon, and something that clearly is a disadvantage for Arteta. I was speaking to a recruitment specialist this week and asking him about Arsenal. He said, look, they've got good players, but they don't have players who are well matched to each other. The puzzle doesn't work together. So my question to you is, how happy is Arteta over the degree of influence he has on the recruitment at Arsenal?
I think that's evolving, Duncan. My answer would be that is evolving, because, you know, there's been almost constant change since he got there. And there's a lot of feeling out going on about what importance does cost cutting, is a very dramatic phrase. In my opinion, his take on it is that he's as yet unsure about how much those above him value getting quality at an acceptable cost compared to tightening the budget, tightening expenditure, and save, and at this stage saving costs. I think that's a debate that's going on or emerging. It's not clear cut, I don't think, for Arteta looking upwards, and I think that it's an area in which he's going to have to be astute, because the way in which you explained the situation with FFP and Paris Saint-Germain and Neymar and Laporta and his books, it needs to be contrasted with Arsenal, and that clearly, if Arteta sees a footballer in his squad who's a high cost item and he thinks, I don't trust you, I can do without you, or I'm guaranteed there's a better player in the academy, then he can become a player in what's happening at the club by saying, that guy, you can move on, you can save costs, you can get a big fee, and we can reduce the wage bill, and then I want in return X, Y, and Z. So he's I think he is yet to become a player in that debate that's going on. And I suppose you've led me to the water, and as a good horse, I'll drink. I'm not certain that Arsenal have got their priorities right yet. I think that some of their thinking is a bit woolly, and other parts of their thinking isn't about excellence at all costs. I think that they are in a moment where they've pared down, got a lot of people in who I think aren't necessarily proven elite at football recruitment. And I'm not certain that all of them have that as their number one priority. I think that it's a time of financial paring down, and they're entitled to do that. But what they're not entitled to do, in my view, is blindfold themselves to the domino effect that will have. So there's no way you can say that Arteta is in an unfortunate or invidious position, because he's a highly talented, young, fit manager who's just easily come through COVID without any problems. He didn't have the fright that Pochettino explained to me that he'd had. He's got a squad that has talent in it. And I think that within the club, his credit is not run out yet. But I do think his situation is difficult. I think that the people, the type of recruitment that you're talking about, I thoroughly agree. It still needs to happen. It's still the side needs to be dovetailed, moulded, not just in playing personnel, but in attitude and behaviour. There are kinks to be erased that, in my view, still are a hangover effect from the worst days of the Wenger regime, which should have been ended sooner, was doing corrosive damage, didn't get ended soon enough, abided throughout Emery, and is still have still not been expunged yet. On which point, I have to say to you, it's been a pleasure being with you. Thank you for the invite. Enjoy the Clasico.
Indeed, and if you haven't yet listened to Graham's brilliant cachet of interviews on this big interview series, please find the links at GH Podcast. And if you haven't seen him on La Liga TV, what better time than Saturday evening when he'll be commentating on El Clasico. Thank you very much, Graham Hunter, for joining us on the Transfer Window podcast. Always enjoyable to have you and get your insight and analysis.
Pleasure, lads. Enjoy the Clasico.
Cheers.
My next podcast started 2 minutes ago.
Even better. We'll be looking out for it. And good luck in the Masters when you finally qualify. This has been the Transfer Window podcast. Please, if you've enjoyed it, go on to iTunes, give us a 5-star rating. You can also find us on social media platforms at Transfer Podcast on Instagram, Twitter, and on Facebook. You can get us on the YouTube channel as well if you want to listen that way. We will be back next week. Until then, do enjoy El Clasico, as Graham has informed you, but stay safe, be well, and thanks for listening.